capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Monday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well and had a nice weekend. It was a cooler weekend. We started warming up. We've had a good bit of rain over the last few days. So, hopefully the drought situation is getting better. We talked about it the other day. I don't know of a time when I've ever seen a drought warning and a flood warning, flood watch. Drought watch, flood watch at the same time the other day, but it is what it is. Hope everybody's doing well though here on this Monday. Bill, Dan,
and you probably weren't going to go out and fire up the old charcoal grill during the rainstorm in question.
No, I wasn't.
But that's the no burn rule still in effect because, like you said, the drought. So you need to be careful with your outdoor activities. But
my yard is pretty soggy right now. Now I will say this, and here we go. I may be in trouble.
Oh boy!
Went to I don't know if it was me or my wife went to water some plants on the porch the other day, and I walked out yesterday, and I thought, man, this front area is still soaked. And then I heard a little something, and it's like,
the
hose had been on now. Like for 36 hours.
Oh gosh!
So, it wasn't intentional, but it wasn't like full bore either. It was just barely on. But I mean, a trickle for 36 hours will I have some bushes on that are in front of our bay window, like some azaleas that were standing like an inch of water.
When the men in black come knocking on your door, we're going to know exactly what happened, and you got to be prepared to throw Kathy under the bus, I think, for that one, right? She was the one watering the plants, right?
Maybe Mayor Ron is listening right now. He'll give you a break here. We'll see.
Or he's already made a phone call.
Here's one. Happen. Go check this one now. Now, look, we haven't watered.
I know where this one lives.
We haven't watered anything really until the other day. So it's not like we've done extra. But man, that's Brian Matthews joining Bill and Dan. B man, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm excited about baseball this week. It's gonna be a fun week. It's crazy finish coming up.
It really is. I mean, what's one of the crazy things is Auburn is the hottest team over an extended period of time. Yep. In the SEC, but they went into last week tied for fourth, won the series, and they're now fifth. I mean, actually,
they're tied for fourth,
yeah, but they would lose the tiebreaker right now because Alabama's won six straight. Yep. Alabama has won six straight, and they have moved into a tie, and it's right now just those two teams are tied. It's not just those two teams. But, I mean, Auburn would lose that tiebreaker to Alabama because of the sweep. And that's crazy, isn't it? I mean,
it really is.
As hot as they've been. But, yes, you've got seven teams within a game and a half battling for the second, third, and fourth spots in Hoover.
That is wild. How secure in your minds, this is a question Doug asked me today on the roundtable, like how secure in your minds is Auburn's position in the top eight?
Very secure.
Pretty darn secure. Not 100%. I think if you get swept, depending on what happens with some of the other teams, you might get bumped out. I think it probably would still hold.
Yeah.
But I think if Auburn can get a win this weekend,
and Jack
they
State
are
is
for
a quad
sure.
one game too.
Yeah. So. You wouldn't want to even crack the door open because of a four-game losing streak to end the year, three against Georgia and a loss in the SEC tournament. I think that's probably what it would take to move Auburn out of the top eight right now, because right now it feels like every poll's got them in the top five.
Yeah, that's the thing. And they could be even higher than that, right?
Yeah, and I think Auburn, it feels like Auburn's got the inside track on – hosting in regional play, and if they were to win, hosting in super regional play for the second year in a row. You know, and if you remember those games, didn't the outcome wasn't what folks wanted, but that those games against Coastal were just, I mean,
what a great atmosphere.
Yeah, it was unforgettable.
Absolutely. And it's going to be. I mean, it's going to
be
this
weekend.
Starting Thursday. Yeah. Of course, as you mentioned, Jack State. Before that, tomorrow night, Auburn looking to even things up after Jack State ruled Auburn earlier this year.
I continue to think this is a big game. And I will be at Jack State because I'm excited to see what happens. I think, you know, a team like Jack State coming to Auburn and run rule them at home, I think that's going to, you know, leave a bitter taste in Auburn's, you know, these players and coaches' mouths. They're going to want to go out there and you know, make up for it.
Was that before or right at the beginning of Griffin Graves?
I think it's been 2 months now.
Yeah, I was going to say it was before Griffin was back, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, we'll get to see Griffin tomorrow night. And now Auburn's pitchers will all be on full rest this weekend for Georgia.
Which will be great. And you just feel like, to me, I feel like this pitching staff may be poised to have one of their best weekends. Just the way they're all throwing. And I know Jake had a little bit of rough outing, but
early on. He probably struggled early.
And in the that was an error, but the miscue certainly hurt him there at shortstop. So,
kidding. First inning would have been 3-up, 3-down.
Yeah, 11 pitches.
Yeah,
so that made a difference too. But I would not bet against Auburn this weekend. Let's put it that way. Well, I know Georgia's got a great team,
and Georgia's got something to play for. Yes, they're the SEC regular season champ. They're 21-6 in conference, but their RPI is still 15.
Yep, I think it may have moved to 14, but yes,
okay,
it may have
moved to 14. But still, but Georgia needs to win this series to try to assure themselves of a top eight national seed. Is that crazy to think that a team that wins going away in the regular season of the SEC, you know, might struggle to be in the top eight?
It's not unprecedented. I mean, we see this sometimes in college basketball too. But you're right. It's crazy to think that the SEC champion.
You don't
champion,
usually see it in the same conference. It's because everybody doesn't play everybody.
Well, no, what I'm saying is what would be crazy is the thought that you would have a team or two from the SEC higher than SEC regular season champion Georgia in the seeding.
Yeah, but
like occasionally you'll get that with like a team that had like if it's really close in the regular season.
It's usually really close, but this one is not. No. I mean, this one Georgia has a 5-game lead over the field with a weekend to play.
Yeah. Is it a reflection of who Georgia played conference?
Well, out of and in conference.
And in conference, because when the league's
Georgia's
this
had
big.
A very fortunate schedule. Look, credit them, though. Yeah. They were picked ninth preseason.
And
have had a fabulous
swing it.
Year. They can kill it.
Want to make a correction. Griffin Graves did pitch. He didn't start, but he came in for a half inning
I was thinking that was right at the beginning.
Yep.
Yeah, it sure was. He didn't start. He came in. That was his first appearance.
Knocked around a little
that
bit.
That was his first appearance. Yep. That's what I was thinking.
15-4 was the final.
So I think there's probably pitchers. A little motivation for Griffin as well.
Yes, definitely. So that'll be an interesting game. 15-4. That's not something.
I mean, Auburn has something to prove. They've got a little to play for in this one. Look, we're already seeing the NCAA's already sent out a note about teams. Talking about and wanting to cancel their midweek games this week because of possible concerns about it hurting their RPI and strength of schedule. And the NCAA has said, don't do that. Now, I wish they'd come down even harder and said, or else.
Yeah.
But they just said, you know, basically, please don't do that. But, Auburn's not about to cancel this one. And
No, it's a big one.
We will see it. I think that'll be a pretty fun ball game tomorrow night, Brian.
It's too far down the road to get excited about this stuff. But when you see the projections for the NCAA tournament and what the super regional matchups could look like if seeding holds, multiple SEC versus SEC
have to
options on the table. I saw one where how about like you could have Georgia, Florida. In the super regionals, you could have Auburn, Ole Miss.
Yeah, last week we saw Auburn,
regional.
Alabama.
Auburn, Alabama has been trendy. Alabama A&M is one that I Baseball America would have right now because a lot of in that you get to like between 6 and 11, a lot of SEC teams in that mix, including Auburn and Alabama and Florida and Texas A&M and Georgia and Ole Miss. Like, there's it's crowded, and you could have I think there's the possibility of multiple SEC versus SEC super regionals on the table if the seeding looks like this.
Yeah, it's very similar to softball, where the tournament seedings came out yesterday, and you've got six of the top eight seeds in softball are from the SEC.
Wow.
12 overall teams in the SEC, 12 overall SEC teams in the field. I think Arkansas in softball is the only SEC team that's not going to have to face another SEC team if they make it all the way to the World Series. So, I mean, yeah, that's the way it is in this league. I mean, with the talent that there is and is competitive, and like you were saying, Brian, I mean, it is crazy looking at now the fact that Texas and Texas A&M didn't play that third game is critical.
Yeah.
I mean,
Auburn
would be tied for second right now instead of tied for fourth.
Because
no,
those two teams
are tied
for second.
They'd be tied for third because
one of those teams would be down.
One would be 17-10. The other one would be tied in that group.
It's really
with
hurt.
Auburn.
Yeah, it really has. Yep. That.
That's why you don't like to have any games canceled if possible. Mm-mm. And that's the only game that's been canceled in the SEC this year.
I don't remember exactly how that went down, but
it was terrible weather on Sunday.
Yeah.
But, I mean, but these two teams are in the state of Texas, too.
They should have known they were getting terrible weather on Sunday and play a doubleheader Saturday. I know they put the coaches and the home teams in charge of that, but maybe there needs to be something looked
at. Remember, it was at Texas because Texas A&M went in there and took the first two and were looking to sweep their former coach.
Right.
Maybe Texas didn't like the way things were going and said, no, I think we'll play it to avoid having to try to play that third game. So, we'll look at the schedule here for the final weekend, which is critical. Auburn has the number one team in the conference, Georgia coming in. But as we said, I mean, this is going to be one of the tougher tests for Georgia this year because they have not drawn as tough a schedule as some other teams. But no question about it, they can swing it. There is no question about that.
Yes.
But let's see, continuing, though, with thoughts on this past weekend, Ethan Bingaman, once again, SEC Freshman of the Week.
Just having an incredible freshman season. His numbers stack up to Ike Irish's freshman season. They're a little different.
Oh, yeah.
Ike had 24 doubles.
Right.
But Ethan already has more home runs.
Mm-hmm.
And his walk to strikeout ratio is much better than
Ike was not a huge strikeout guy either.
Exactly, and Ethan's even better. So that's a great sign about how much better he's going to get. So terrific for him. This is his third one, I believe.
Right.
So far, he had a great week. He was let's see if I can pull up his numbers real quick. Batted 400. Four runs scored, a home run, four RBIs, two walks, one stolen base. Just another good week for the freshman. I think he's got to be – I don't know if he's the favorite, but he's certainly –
he's got to be among the favorites. If he's
SEC freshman of the year.
Yeah, there's no way he's not very high if he's not the freshman of the year in the SEC.
He's been outstanding. He really has.
Yes, indeed. All right, so that's baseball. We can talk about whatever you would like here on this Monday. As we're just getting underway, Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews here on the Monday Drive. I'd love for you to join in. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. We'll get to our first break. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. U.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. We talked some baseball there. We'll get more into that. Locally,
Big Cat Weekend is Saturday too.
Is that right?
Yeah, it is. So that's a pretty big event going on this weekend too.
It is indeed. Man, that's come up quickly.
Yep.
I was going to say, I mean, locally, congratulations to Auburn High's both boys and girls soccer teams winning
that?
State.
Wow.
I mean, there have been many, many times when they're really, really good year in and year out, but it seems like there'd be a Birmingham school that would knock them out. a lot of the time, but not this time. They both get 1-0 wins.
And there was champs. And I mean we were following the adventures of both. I mean, I know women's golf was going today, and I think they're in a spot of trouble a little bit, but I know they maybe tried to finish strong. Women's tennis, remarkable victory over the weekend. We were able to report live on some of that while it was going on Friday, but I think they wrapped it up after we were done. So very, very exciting for women's tennis. They're on to the final eight with a chance to maybe bring home a national championship. Would be the first one in program history mm-hmm. for Auburn women's tennis. We went down last week the list of – and football's a different thing because they're not NCAA national championships. It's, you know, about how many does your school claim and who awarded you the national championship. And some national championships are seemingly a little bit more legitimate than other ones. But
right.
But then you get into sports like – with an NCAA tournament to determine an NCAA champion. I mean, outside of Auburn having a ton of swimming and diving championships.
And equestrian.
Well, although equestrian's not NCAA. That's a different organization.
Are the most national championships.
Swimming and diving has a ton of national championships. And then you get into there was a track and field national championship in the last 20 years and men's golf 2 years ago. And it's like and that's the list. And so to be able
football.
And that's what I mean. And then, football, it's a different sort of deal because of how the national championships are crowned. But when you look at NCAA championships, like being able to add in a sport like women's tennis, being able to add a national championship to the list it's significant. I mean, there are schools in the SEC with very few mm-hmm. national championships in their history. And so, for both women's tennis and men's golf, two sports
The women are tied for fifth. Okay. Riley's sending us an update a little while ago.
Thank you, Riley.
Tied for fifth after the opening round.
Women's golf.
Women's golf with a 2-under par today, four strokes back of co-leaders Houston and Ole Miss. So that's where women's golf stands.
And men's golf seemingly with as good a chance as anybody to bring home a second national championship in 3 years. And Jackson, Brian, you guys have been following this throughout his run. Jackson's
he's as highly decorated a college golfer as Jackson Coyman as there's ever been in the SEC.
Yeah, and maybe he can finish it off in grand style here. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm making an assumption too, but I don't know for sure he's leaving. But
a lot of folks were surprised he hadn't left before this year.
True. True.
I mean, he obviously really enjoys and has enjoyed his time at Auburn.
I know I did way back in the day.
Oh yeah, and we weren't even that notorious.
No. What he has waiting for him after Auburn is a little bit different than I think what any of us had. As sort of a post college career, but he's got he's put together this remarkable run as a college golfer, and I mean there are folks who feel very confident that whenever he decides it's time. When he makes the jump to the professional ranks, he's going to fit right in on the PGA Tour. And there are some ranking systems. Golf is complicated, but there are people who have rankings that include the amateurs and the college ranks. And, it's a listing of everybody. And there are folks who will tell you Jackson has performed like a top 40, top 50 golfer in the world already without turning pro yet. And so, while also, going to class, right? This is the thought that he could have, whenever he decides it's time, it feels like that's a guy that you feel confident is going to have a very long, very productive professional career as a golfer, and it's just a matter of and potentially a superstar career mm-hmm. as a golfer. Like that's on the table too, not just fitting in on the tour, but being a guy who.
Being
a guy who wins big tournaments
if you're not a golf fan, you're going, well, is that the norm? Yes. I mean, the best young golfers on the tour are generally guys that have been the best golfers mm-hmm. on the college, on the college level.
Yeah, most notably probably Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
Being a guy who shattered college golf records, but that's all. There's also the caveat of a lot of golfers skipped college golf entirely. Because they were ready to turn pro out of high school and ready to and before a couple of years ago, far more lucrative to go the professional ranking as early as possible. That's one thing about NIL, Brian, that has changed. I think several sports where, not football, but sports where guys used to have to seriously consider starting their pro careers as early as possible for financial reasons.
Not anymore. Now it's you could sometimes.
Yeah, now you have situations where Olympic gymnasts are doing college gymnastics because they can keep their sponsorship money.
Yep.
And college golfers and college tennis players who would have probably turned pro several years ago are going deeper into their college careers. And I think that's a good thing for all parties involved, especially since I don't think it really limits their ability to transition to pro, right? Like, it seems like they're still getting ready for professional sports while playing college sports instead of being in a full minor league developmental I think it's a good thing. And not to mention, it's also, I think, helped extend the careers of basketball and football players that have probably, and baseball players that would have probably considered, well, I got to go in the draft the moment I can for money. And we saw too many of those, I think, in the 2000s and the 2010s, where it's like, oh, that guy was probably a year or two away from really being something at the college level and turning that into a pro career. It leaves early for money reasons, and it doesn't work out the way it probably should have.
Yeah, it's made college sports better because you're keeping these players longer, right? And they're getting better, they're more competitive, and you got more talent. You know, the SEC's been great, but I think it's getting better, and the talent's spreading out, so there's more teams that can compete at the top of the SEC now. It's just a totally different sport, or it's at least changing. Maybe not totally different, but it's going through some important changes.
And I would say Auburn seems to have, and I'd kick it to you on this, but like Auburn seems to have coaches in football and men's basketball and baseball who, even if they would like some tinkering to the current system, seem pretty comfortable navigating the waters of the transfer portal and modern recruiting.
Yeah, and I don't think that was the case with Hugh Freeze. I think he had to be kind of dragged into it, and that's not not
oh, yeah,
him.
You're
that's
right.
That's just his time, and it changed a lot. And some coaches jump into it, full off all 2 feet. And
I mean, he was all focused on high school.
Right, right.
And there's nothing wrong with that because Auburn had not been focused on high school at all. But the portal has become so important, especially when you have a lot of holes.
I think Golish is all in on this era of college football.
I think he's pretty much all in on whatever it's going to take to improve his team.
I think Stephen Pearl understands it, too. I think he's the right age to get it. I think him and his staff are attacking it the right way. And then I look at Butch. He's a veteran coach. He's got a bunch of veteran coaches around him, but I think they've dove right in with this, too. I don't think it's slowed them down at all.
Is anybody in college baseball getting more out of, like, first-year players the last couple of years than Butch? Or he's on the short list of fresh – like, especially good teams.
Yeah.
Like, the amount of freshman production on last year's team and this year's team for a team that's stayed in the top five, top ten – and won consistently, that's really impressive.
You can look at LSU. Their coaches said a couple of times about their struggles is they didn't do a good enough job bringing in a quality freshman. And I think
they relied too much on the portal.
And I think Auburn's had a great balance. And if you really look at the guys who have stepped up, they've had some portal guys that may not have lived up to what we thought they might have been or what they were in the fall, but they've had guys like Bingaman really step up, LJ Cormier really step up.
Look at the pitchers.
Really good.
Yeah, when you're talking about guys from the portal, I mean, Jake has been, so much better than he was as a freshman last year. And so, I mean,
those are great evaluations by them, whether it was in high school or whether it's going in the portal and getting guys. Because, Jake was a highly recruited guy, but he wasn't the number one pitcher in the portal.
No.
But he's pitched like one of those guys for sure.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Who we got?
Uncle Ollie is hanging on. What's up, buddy?
Hey, guys. I always enjoy talking with you. Marciano, he kind of got the short straw last week. That was kind of unfair. 4 days rest. And so I kind of give him grace on that. I still think he's a great pitcher. A couple of things, and I said it last week. If everything's on the line, give me Dre Alvarez. That dude he's a dude. He is a bulldog. And I know y'all made the comment last week about, if they do it, if he does it at duty failed on a Friday night, this, that, and the other. Well, I would say he did.
Yeah, yeah. Indeed.
Oh, no, he would be, I mean, with all due respect to Jake and to Petro and to Jackson Sanders, like, I mean, I think one of the really interesting things about this Auburn team is the number of pitchers they feel like they can start who have a chance to win a game against a good team. But if it's one game to win right now, I totally understand why you would say give me double A as the pitcher I want starting for Auburn.
Having said all that, I will say this. The most valuable pitcher we have, honestly, in my opinion, is Jackson Sanders. Yeah. That guy, he can go 4-5 innings. He can go on a Friday. He can go on a Saturday. He can go on a Sunday. And he has ice in his veins. That dude is he's incredible.
I agree. And I know it's not set up that way right now, but I really like him leading off a series. I like the energy he brings, the competitiveness he brings. He would be my, I guess, Thursday night guy if it would work out, you know, rest-wise, or my Friday night guy, whatever you want to put it out there as far as going into the SEC tournament, into the regional, and possibly super regional.
I figured him out. If you don't get to him in the first two innings, you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because
a lot of pitchers are like that. Get them early or look out.
And I'm kind of wondering, is he trying to figure out the umpire, the strike zone, what's going on, and then he adjusts based on that, or does he just get stronger? You know, I can't figure that out. But I know this, if you don't get to him in the first two innings, it's over. And I listened to way too many podcasts, but I was listening to one last night. And they said that if Georgia sweeps Auburn, the only difference it's going to make is Auburn in the top four national seed or the bottom four national seed?
I don't want to
take my chances.
Yeah, no, I'd be pretty – look, I think it's amazing what Auburn's done this year. I think Auburn right now clearly belongs in the top eight. I think it would be very easy for the committee to slide Auburn down if you're talking about a team coming in on a four-game losing streak. Right, if you lose three games to Georgia and in Hoover, it would be, especially because you're talking about, like, you're splitting hairs with the teams.
Well,
the problem with that
theory is this: Auburn is number one in strength of schedule.
Yep.
They're number three in RPI, and they're number two in out of conference RPI.
Which isn't going to get worse with losses to Georgia.
Exactly.
And
so there's no there. They're a top eight. There's nothing that can happen.
I would agree with that. I would worry that, like, a slide would open the door to move out of the top eight. But for the most part, I think that they have done what they need to do to secure themselves a place in the top eight and hosting in super regional play.
Yeah, I agree. All right, guys. Always enjoy the conversation.
Good hearing from you, Uncle Lolly.
And what, I mean, we talked about it, like, what an atmosphere. If you can get past, I mean, look, regionals will be a great atmosphere, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I
yes.
mean, postseason baseball at Plainsman Park. I mean, and what a treat to get to go, like, this deep into May, and potentially we're talking about important baseball in June with, you know, with some weeks to go before the media days and before conference play and you know before you start, I mean, what the Baylor game, like, it's
right,
you still got some time. So the fact that you can have some important baseball to talk about between now and then, and the longer it can go for a team that could maybe accomplish really special things in the postseason this year, this team's got what you would need to beat just about anybody.
Oh, they do.
It's a matter of going out there and doing it.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Just getting underway, a quarter of the way in on the Monday Drive. 334-321-1390. That'll get you through. Come on in.
Email The Drive at espnau.com.
Welcome Welcome back into the drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Anything? Let's say. Oh yeah, I guess there was. Auburn got a quarterback commit.
They did, and I think it's a really interesting pickup. I do. I think Auburn needed, you know, a quarterback in this class, a high school kid. They went after a couple of high profile five stars.
Yeah, and I had some people that felt very disappointed because thought Auburn was going to get a big time. And it's like, well. I mean, he may be.
Well, it's about how much value to put on that position, how much value to put in signing a true freshman quarterback when you may have next year's starter in the roster.
Yeah, if you feel really good about not just this year, but next year, then what's, you know, how important do you – I mean, if it's somebody that you don't feel like has to be a starter next year.
So, you know, and maybe Auburn still feels like they need to go into the portal and sign a high-profile quarterback, or maybe they're going to wait – until the season goes and see how these younger guys develop, like Tia. But Gary Chapman is the kid that they got a commitment from. He is from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. He's from Brookwood, Snellville, Georgia. And he's committed to Wake Forest about a week or two ago, decommitted. Mm-hmm. I think he came to Auburn at least once, maybe twice. And he's more of an athletic kid, 6'1", around 190-ish, can really run, has a really strong arm. And is a guy that you can just develop into a potential starter. And that I think when Auburn takes kids like this, they're saying, hey, we want you to commit to being here a while and working hard, and we believe that you could be something special in the future. So this is a guy they'll probably have around for several years and have him give him an opportunity to learn and develop and see what he can become.
Yeah, so Gary Chapman, right?
Yes, Gary Chapman.
There seems to be a commitment to, and maybe it's not a reliance on, oh, we need these freshmen to play right now and help us right now and be a big part of the attack immediately, but a willingness to sign freshmen that you think can help you eventually, and maybe even like before this year is over, or maybe a year from now when you're talking about spring practice in 27, like all over the depth chart, especially on offense. It feels like they have someone they're you know, someone who's marinating and someone who's getting ready and who's going to be competing to be a really big part of the attack in 2020 in you know, maybe not this year, but in 27.
Well, it's an interest, and it's an interesting thing because it's harder to do these days is to convince someone we like you. But you may not be able to play for a year or so. So, I mean, it's a little difficult to get those kind of guys. But you're right, Dan. I mean, I think Auburn does have quite a few guys that are sort of in that situation that they like. I mean, they're not ready to throw them out there into the SEC battles right now. Right. But they project these guys to be pretty good and feel like that, you know, with a year of development or so, that they have a chance.
I think you have to have a mix in a high school signing class now. And I expect Auburn to sign around 18 to 20. And I don't know what the percentage will be, but there's going to be some of those guys, like the running back, Mason
Johnson Cook,
who they invested a lot of money in to beat Miami and beat out other high-profile programs.
Like you, they expect him to be able to step in and help them
so
immediately.
When you look at that and you look at what Auburn has and what they're returning, you could probably come to some conclusions, in my opinion.
I agree.
But then, and you look at Donovan Moore, you know that Auburn likes to rotate defensive linemen. You know that they brought in true freshmen the last couple of years that have rotated in and played. I would expect him to step in and play right away as a true freshman. Probably not be a starter, but that's going to keep him engaged and ready to be a starter or a bigger contributor in year two, year three. So those are a couple of guys. But I think most of the rest of the class is more developmental types. But you can see huge upsides. Like, Brylan Odor, I think that's how you say it. The wide receiver from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. I mean, 6'3", around 200 pounds, can really run, is a track star. He's going to a new high school, you know, hopefully throw the ball more and he'll work on those skills. And this guy could be a special, special player, right? When you get a 6'3 guy that can run like that, you know, that upside is really high. So you're going to see a mix of those guys in this class, I believe. And then you go into the portal and you try to fill in the rest of the roster.
Yeah, and you use the portal. Now, the thing is, what's interesting is Alex Golish and his staff have used the portal for two things. They've done sort of the same thing with the portal. It's not just been guys with one year of eligibility that we've got to have play this year. Now, sure, you go after those guys, and if they can help you win right now, you get them. Yep. But they also keep bringing in, you know, players with multiple years of eligibility that that have a chance to help down the road. And I mean, some of them, like Derek Plaz, who expected him to be in the picture for a starting spot this spring.
Who saw Brian Williams Jr. As a starter when the, I know there was some disciplinary stuff going on, but thought that Brian Williams Jr. is starting at receiver when the ones go out there for a day.
Well, you know, you look at how the portal affected Auburn, right? Auburn lost some players that they had invested a lot of money and time and effort in developing, and now they're probably going to go to other schools, even in the SEC, and be pretty good players. But Auburn's getting a Derek Plaz back that played for one of the best offensive line coaches and one of the best offensive lines in the country, was a backup. He is ready to be a starter now, and he may come to Auburn and give Auburn, you know, the two best years of his college playing career, right? So it can work both ways, but I agree. I think as we move forward into Golish's tenure here, there'll be more emphasis on the high school guys and a little bit less on the portal, but I still think they're going to seek that mix out.
Yeah, I mean, once you feel like you are, you know, you have a solid roster and you're going to lose some pieces, but you're continuing to develop them, then you don't need as many pieces that you have to pull from the portal.
It just felt like, and again, it wasn't Hugh Freeze isn't the only one who had this sort of plan, but the thought of like the acknowledgement that, all right, well, in December, we're going to have to go into the portal and go get a lot, right? Or like, every year, the thought of like, all right, well, you've got, you know, your quarterback and a whole bunch of your offensive linemen, and like the thought that like there's beyond this year, it's a big question mark as to what the future holds. Or there are very few developmental pieces on the roster. And this year, like maybe Alex Golish is still going to have to go into the portal too in December and bring in a bunch of pieces for the 2017. Like, that's I don't want to dismiss.
No. I mean, you can't ignore the need to win as much as possible right now. I mean, you can't just like, well, we're going to punt. But it seemed like we felt that a couple of years ago. It's like almost, well, we'll sacrifice right now because we're developing for the future. You can't do that.
And back to the quarterbacks. One more point to point out, right? I don't remember the names, but there are two 5-star caliber guys that Auburn was in the final couple, three or four for, right? So Auburn recruited those guys really hard. They got them to campus. What are the odds that one or both end up in the portal at some point in time?
Yeah, you think, I mean, fairly
high.
Better than 50%. Yeah. I mean, you look around at the SEC and in the playoffs, how many of those quarterbacks started their careers at that school?
Exactly.
Not many.
So Auburn, quote unquote, lost those recruitments, but those recruitments might not be over.
They already have a relationship with Alex Golish and with Auburn.
You know when people talk about like splitting off college football from all the other sports when you know in college, it's like, oh, it's so different.
The revenue sports.
Okay. You know what? I think when you talk about the transfer portal, talking about quarterback is different than talking about the rest of the roster.
I think you're right.
Because one guy plays and the turnover is so like it's almost like a different game at quarterback as opposed to almost anywhere else. And like it's understandable that you're gonna lean on experience and pursue the best possible option at quarterback in the portal. A lot of other it's easier to develop almost anywhere else too, because you can get other guys on the field
You may be able to convince them to hang around for another year.
It's really tough to keep more than one 5-star caliber type quarterback on the roster. I know some schools can because they're established. They've got a system that quarterback wants to play for and a coach that he wants to play for. Sure, it's there are exceptions, but I think overall it's just hard to keep a whole bunch of those really highly recruited, talented guys on your roster.
Waiting.
Right.
Yes.
They want to go play.
Let's get to our final break of hour number one. Right back with more of your phone calls when we come back here on the Monday Drive.
War Eagle, this is Coach Larry Vickers.
Cobb.
Welcome back into the Drive, final segment of hour number one here on this Monday. Let's get back to the Drive hotline, and Greg is up next. Hey, Greg.
How y'all doing today, fellas?
Pretty good.
What's up, Greg?
Hey, boy, can y'all hear me?
Yeah, we got you. We can hear you. Yeah.
No, I was hearing, listening, kind of talking about the court.
He's breaking up there.
And y'all kind of spoke on it a little bit. And, I mean, what's the point of paying all this money for a five-star? Being honest with you, we ain't seen a five-star start since Bo Nix. I just don't see where the value is in that. And this guy they got, I mean, let's just be honest. What if he was 3 inches taller? I mean, he's guaranteed 4-star if he's not already going to be one anyway. So, I mean, you got a developmental piece. You're going to hit the portal for a quarterback next year anyway, and it's going to be a Tia and a transfer guy battling for the top spot next year. So, I mean, I don't really see the problem with that, and then waiting next year to, you know, go after somebody in the portal. Not the portal, but high school range. So that's kind of what I was figuring that was going to do whenever we didn't get Mensah. So I don't think that's a bad deal, and they can allocate that money elsewhere as far as, you know, showing up the trenches and other positions of need, and next year geared on up.
It's definitely more important right now to be doing that, Brian.
I agree, and I think he has a great point on the quarterback. Why sign a freshman 5-star guy for $2 million like Deuce Knight last year unless you know for sure he's going to be a starter? And do you really want to put your future guaranteeing a freshman to be a starting quarterback in the SEC? So unless you have a really established program and that guy says, hey, I understand the situation, I want to come in there and you know, be the guy in 2 or 3 years, so I'm willing to compete and sit. Unless you got that guy, it really is a high-risk thing to do is to sign a 5-star type quarterback and spend that kind of money when you can spend it on other important positions. And then if you need one, you go in the portal and get a potential starter there.
Yeah. How much better would Auburn have been a year ago if they'd had whatever that amount of money was to sign a couple of more, you know, their offensive linemen or two or, you know, something else?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
So great point, Greg. Great point.
Great stuff.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skyball.
Of course, it's Monday, so in hour two, we'll dive into Brian's musings from today.
I feel like Bill's got this one, and we'll see if Dan can jump on it.
We'll see what happens.
This will be one of my favorite artists of all time.
Okay. Let folks know about the work you guys are doing at the website.
Going to be a busy week, right? I'll be at Jacksonville for the game.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about Big Cat.
Yep, got Big Cat coming up Saturday, so a huge recruiting weekend, right? And this is sort of setting up the big official visits, 4 weeks, which will start at the end of May. So it'll be 2 weeks from Big Cat, I think, right? And then, you know, I think Auburn's still looking for that final piece in the basketball portal. I think Mantis, as far as I know, is still that guy they're waiting on.
So. Haven't heard anything to the contrary. We haven't heard anything. I mean, I know people keep going, what's the latest? Has he done anything? No.
No latest to report either way right now on that. So we're just kind of a wait and see mode on that. And then what else? I think that's mostly it. Recruiting, baseball, football team will be back, I guess, after the break and start summer workouts, you know. But that's just summer workouts, right? So but I think the biggest thing to fall right now are the baseball team and recruiting, which is about to really, really spike up with Big Cat and then official visits coming in.
Yeah, so that's coming up. And, of course, it's all right there at AuburnSports.com.
Yes.
All right, we're getting close to the end of hour number one.
Excited that Big Cat carried on as a tradition,
too.
I mean, I remember when you know that first Gene Chizik Big Cat weekend.
What was the prowl?
The tiger prowl.
That didn't.
I don't know if that's because
the NCAA tried to kill it.
I know.
The tiger prowl may not make its return. But no, I mean, Big Cat being this, you know, this way, especially when you feel like your campus is an asset and you're trying to introduce your coaches to a bunch of new students, or you're trying to introduce a bunch of new coaches to a bunch of new recruits. And build some camaraderie and some chemistry. Like it was a good idea then, and nearly 20 years later, it's still a good idea.
I did too, and it's something Auburn kind of got started. And
they really did. A lot of other schools have picked up and tried to do something similar.
It's been
now
very successful. It's played a big part in Auburn getting great players, and they need to keep it going.
That's a Chizik, Looper, and
Trooper.
And Malzahn. You know, give
Trooper and Looper probably deserve the most credit for
the brain trust. Yeah.
We're halfway done here on the Monday Drive. Again, Brian's Monday musings, and I love to hear from you, your calls, coming up in hour number two here on the Monday Drive.
Sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here in the studio. Turned out to be a pretty nice Monday afternoon. I hope everybody had a good weekend. It was an interesting weekend. Auburn baseball got off to a rough start Thursday night, dropping a 10-3 decision to Mississippi State.
We talked
about it, though, Friday, though, Dan. I mean, Auburn has bounced back so many times. They've been rare. When there's a stinker, they've been able to shake that off and turn around and play very well, and they did just that in Starkville.
What about that Friday night
game late? You know, Auburn has the lead, State comes back, and then Chase Frelick just steps up. Was it the eighth or the ninth? I can't remember. But
it was top of the ninth. Top of the ninth. Frelick with the go ahead home
run. Hit that home run, and that was a huge hit in that series. It won that game for them, and then they came out
and then they
Saturday
run rule them on Saturday.
Yeah, dominated. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Was that Jackson's inning? Was that when they used him?
I think Jackson pitched the final three innings
pitched
that game.
That was his
appearance in there, because I think he was out there to close.
Excuse me, he pitched the final 4.1 innings.
Wow,
that game.
It was his. Yeah, he closed it out. But the State starter on Thursday, as good as just about anybody Auburn's seen this season in SEC play.
He's another guy that's gonna go high in the draft. I mean, a lefty that has the stuff that he does and can throw it for strikes.
He's special. Yeah, yep. he's a Friday night SEC starter. We've seen plenty of them before, and he is definitely one of them.
And State, you know, I think for State, the challenge in the postseason is going to be winning the games he doesn't start.
Right.
You know, finding if they have enough. Both with their pitching and with their bullpen, you know.
Their starter Friday, the kid that hadn't pitched in a month and a half, he looked pretty good.
He is another guy with great stuff.
Yep. Yes,
but just coming back from an injury may take him some time to get going.
Yeah, so he only went a couple innings, but. So
we mentioned earlier, like there are some tournament projections where Auburn and State could see each other.
State's a team that could be very dangerous in the in the postseason.
There's so many in this league.
Texas A&M is the team that could be very dangerous in the postseason. Yeah, it's just, yes. It's
again, the standings are crazy.
Alabama's pitching, right? Alabama could be
Alabama's really playing well now.
Yeah,
it's funny. There a couple of weeks ago, there were people like, what an embarrassing loss that was to get swept by Alabama. Alabama's doing some sweeping now.
Yeah.
They've swept the last couple of series, and they're right there tied with Auburn at 16-11. I mean, the number of teams, like I said a while ago, seven teams within a game and a half in the battle for second, third,
it's
and
wild.
Fourth.
It really is. What a incredible finish this is going to be. Every game, every day, and every game is Thursday, Friday, Saturday this weekend because it's the final weekend. So you're going to be following scores and following games from across the Southeast to try to figure out where you're sort of fitting in there after every night.
The easiest path to this would probably involve Bama taking a tumble, because I think right now both Auburn and Bama are in some folks' top eight.
Yep.
For the postseason.
Bama's schedule, their strength of schedule and RPR aren't quite as high as Auburn's. That's why you're seeing them seated lower. But they've got Ole Miss at home this weekend.
But if Bama were to take a bit of a tumble, you could be back in that position where folks are talking about an Iron Bowl rematch potentially in super regional play. I mean, we were talking about in the first hour the chance that you could see SEC teams rematching in super regional play. SEC teams could see each other again with a chance at Omaha on the line, depending on who advances and what the bracket looks like. I cannot wait. I know I don't want to overlook this weekend. This weekend's going to be awesome with Georgetown and Auburn, you know, getting to wrap up this remarkable regular season that they've had. SEC tournament play coming up. But I cannot wait to see what this bracket looks like, to know who's coming to Auburn in regional play and to find out who potentially we could be talking about. And right now, it would be who could potentially be coming to Auburn for super regional play.
Right.
Which is a great feeling to be able to talk about that. But also, in a field like this, like who could it be? Like who could be that team on the other side of the draw?
It's going to be a good team no matter what, right?
I'll say another name out there. You know, scary ghost stories and foe. You know, Coastal Carolina's looming out there as a with those pitchers back. They've dropped out of the 16 in a lot. Like they've dropped out of some folks' top 16s for projection. So they, I mean, by the way, you think, hey, you get to host regional play, and your big reward is
Coastal Carolina.
Coastal's the two.
Oh God, that'll be
your regional. So that's out there as a possibility too. But if Coastal were to play their way back in, they'd be in the bottom half of the top 16 and looking to crash a party for the second year in a row.
The interesting thing about the seven teams that are all right there within 1.5 games of second, the only ones that play each other are Texas A&M,
Mississippi State,
Mississippi State, right?
Yeah.
Yep. So everybody else plays.
Auburn is playing Georgia. The number one team.
A lot of buzz, but
Alabama's playing an Ole Miss team is 14-13.
Right, they're
just another game back.
Yep.
So I mean, yeah, it is crazy that you look at the standings today, where A&M and Texas are tied at second, and then Auburn and Alabama are tied at
Texas has Missouri. You got to think they're going to probably sweep.
Yes, Texas probably will.
Second.
A&M's got Mississippi State, like we said. So you would think Texas has got the advantage. And they need that because they end up tied with A&M. They lose the tiebreaker. Of course, they'd both be in the top four as long as they, you know, don't drop a couple of games. But let's see.
Arkansas at Kentucky. That's going to be a tough series for Arkansas. Alabama, as you mentioned, host Ole Miss. It's going to be tough to sweep them. You think they're going to win the way they're playing right now, but Ole Miss is still a good team. And then Florida plays at LSU.
An LSU team that
up and down, but they are certainly capable of winning a game or two.
9-18 in conference. Yeah. After winning the national title a year ago, they're 9-18.
Yep. It happens. I think we're going to see more of that in this league because if you have a couple of things go bad, maybe a major injury or maybe a couple of players that don't work out for whatever reason,
you can go
from a top two or three team down to the bottom really
fast. And the other thing, we've talked about it in other sports, but it's just as important in baseball as some continuity, some carryover, some players who have been there and done that on this team to try to help, you know, bring guys in. And here's the culture.
Yep.
Here's the way we play. And LSU, did nearly a complete overhaul,
right?
And you can see what can happen.
So that's why it's so important to keep bringing in good freshmen,
right?
Every year. Have two or three or however many be able to participate or get here and say, okay, maybe not this year, but this guy's playing next year for sure. Like Brandon McCrane for one.
Looking at a tournament projection right now, where Coastal Carolina is the two seed in the Athens, Georgia regional. Wow. As a matter of fact, they can be coming to
what mix. A matchup though. I mean, it's a great matchup with Auburn pitching against their hitting. But sending Coastal Carolina and their pitching at Georgia's stadium.
Yeah,
I think obviously I'm going to be in Auburn watching theirs, but that would be a great matchup to keep an eye on too.
So, that's another Auburn people I think understand better than just about anybody. Like Coastal's another thing to watch for, like when we get this bracket. And for that matter, a lot of folks have Jacksonville State in the top 32, and Jacksonville State as a two seed in some SEC team's region.
Well, Alabama and Auburn would be. I think we've seen the NCAA like to put teams like Jacksonville State
close regionally.
Maybe Florida State or maybe Georgia, but not far away at all, if not Auburn or Alabama.
I'd say that, and if Southern Miss, I know Southern Miss is a top 16 in a lot of projections right now. If they're not, they would also be one of those two seeds that you would likely
send. Be a high two seed if they're not.
I don't want to see them for sure until a super regional at the most.
And you're likely seeing, and I'd say the other side of that would be if Southern Miss or Coastal Carolina can play their way into the top 16, they're likely hosting an SEC team in their regional because there are just that many SEC teams on the draw. And you don't want to
SEC teams, I would think.
In the top 32? Like either one seed
in the field. I'm thinking in the field, at least 11. I would think at least 11. Kentucky is 12th right now, and they're 30-18. So they may.
Kentucky is a top 32 seed in the projection that I'm looking at right
now.
Okay. It might be everyone, but LSU and South Carolina.
Missouri.
It might be 13.
Yeah, that'd be everybody. Vandy's got 11. Vandy doesn't have a great strength of schedule. Mm-hmm. And they just lost that tough series to South Carolina, and I think they've got another not very good team this week. Who's Vandy got?
I haven't looked.
Well, let's see. I had the schedule just a second.
I think Vandy is out of a lot of projections right now.
No, Vandy's got South Carolina this weekend.
The RPI is not good with Vanderbilt either this year.
Yeah, so it's tough. I mean, even if Vandy sweeps, they may not be able to make it, and that's crazy.
Yeah, that's another great quality program.
So that's why it's probably is 11. Probably is 11 SEC
teams. I think Kentucky's getting in. Kentucky would be, and maybe Kentucky's the last SEC team in, based on some of these projections. We'll see.
Well, that'd be 12 then, I guess. No, that'd be 12.
Kentucky would make 12, right?
So that'd be Vandy, LSU, South Carolina, and Missouri. Three SEC teams that have won national championships over the last few years. Did you see Jeff Shearer's tweet the other day? They even mentioned it on the SEC Network. That when you look at the bottom eight teams in the SEC, seven of those have won national championships in the last 10 or 15 years. And they have a combined total of 17 national titles for the bottom eight teams in the league.
So Vanderbilt has a 73 RPI right now. They're not getting in with that.
Not
even close.
And they got to win the
SEC. Yeah, they've got South Carolina this week, so it doesn't matter.
They would have to win.
They'd have to win the conference tournament.
They'd have to win in Hoover.
Same as LSU. I mean, LSU's going to have to win the conference tournament.
All 12. I'm looking at a projection right now. All 12 of those teams that we mentioned from the SEC getting in are either ones or twos. So you're
South Carolina 111 RPI
in regional play. So the regions that don't.
That's why South Carolina will be making a change.
So pretty much every region that isn't hosted by an SEC team would have, like, you look at this projection. It's like, okay, well, in Hattiesburg, Arkansas is the two seed. In Tallahassee, Oklahoma is the two seed. In Atlanta, Georgia Tech, Kentucky is the two seed. UCLA, Tennessee is the two seed. So on top of the seven SEC.
Six or seven. I mean, how many of the top eight? Like I said, softball has six of the top eight national seeds. Baseball is going to have very close to that, if not
Georgia Tech will be one. UCLA will be in the top eight.
And UNC, right?
Yeah, UNC.
So that means five SEC teams in the top eight.
Yeah. Southern Miss would be the other contender.
Yeah, seven.
Southern Miss, the number nine RPI now. USC, number eight RPI. Mm-hmm. Florida State, number seven. So there are other contenders out there.
Florida State. Mm-hmm. But still, I mean, you're talking about four or five SEC teams
in your
top eight. And
12, a bunch more in the next eight.
12 SEC teams in your top 32 teams in the field.
I mean, the interesting thing is we mentioned all those teams, but Georgia's 14 RPI, but they've won the SEC, so are they a top eight national seed right now?
That's what I'm saying. They've got something to play for this weekend.
They're sixth in the projection I'm looking at right now. But that, I mean,
which I think is probably fair. I don't think you can put everything in RPI. You've got to
look at
other
things. Need to give them some credit for winning the conference and winning it as handily as they have.
Right, exactly.
Despite, I mean, you just have to play who you play. You don't know.
Right.
I mean, like we said, when you look at those names at the bottom of the SEC this year, who would have thought your defending national champs, LSU, was going to be 9-8?
I would urge folks, like, even if you have not been paying close attention to college baseball all season long, if the amount of games or if it's not user friendly, if you're paying attention to football and basketball, you know, and you're not ready to jump in yet, like, now is when, like, these games this weekend. I mean, I would say maybe a couple of weeks ago you could have said this, but for sure, like, this week, the SEC tournament next week, college baseball's postseason is so awesome. Like that week regional play starts up, and you just got games all day. Like, it's one of the great days in following college sports, especially when your team is in, especially when your team's hosting, and it just seems like it could be a really really fun next couple of weeks for Auburn baseball, and you got a team that can hang with just about anybody.
Yeah, no question about it. Let's Let's go ahead and get to our first break of hour number two. We'll get to your phone calls when we come back. 334-321-1390 as we continue with the Monday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews. And we'll get to the phones. And another Brian, I'm assuming. I don't think it's a – I think
me.
Brian Matthews is on the phone as well. Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Pretty cool trick, if you can.
Oh, I can do that. I can
call right now.
Hey,
Brian, good afternoon. How are you guys doing?
Oh, doing great. Thanks for being on.
Not to take away from the baseball talk, because the baseball has been fantastic. I'm not a huge MLB guy, but I do love some college baseball. I've actually wondered, I have not heard this mentioned by anyone, and Brian's always a good source of information, but with the new rulings on the NCAA for the 5-for-5 with the age limit.
Uh-oh.
Is that?
You broke out.
Yeah,
there.
We just heard. Last thing we heard was with the 5-for-5 and the age limit.
You cut out after age limit. Repeat that last part.
Yeah. Sorry. Has there been any discussions on age discrimination based on that?
I haven't heard it, but that's an excellent point. And every rule that the NCAA makes now is probably going to be challenged in the court somewhere until they can sit down and collectively bargain and hammer out deals that are 100% enforceable.
Yeah, the only thing right now, Brian, is if all the administrators and the coaches are for it, then it'll be okay. It's the first time somebody has a player that they feel like can help them win that's over that age limit. Then we're going to go to court.
Which tends to happen with every single
rule
they do to try to limit players or money or movement or those type of things.
Yeah, that's my only question. I was just curious because it seems to me like that kind of is a loophole. I know these guys don't technically work for the university, but that being such a protected, age is a protected class. I would just think that would be brought up.
Yeah, this is something that I think it's been acknowledged that it's not clear if this would survive legal challenges. It could, but a challenge on like simply age discrimination basis. Like the NCAA has been able to defend some of their eligibility rules.
I was a little surprised, quite frankly, when I saw that age rule added in there, because you know we've talked about certain situations when players play professionally in one sport and come back. They apparently some of those guys wouldn't qualify. What if there's someone who has to work to help his family for a couple of years and would be out of eligibility before he turned 24. So, no, I could see where this definitely would be challenged, Brian.
Absolutely.
Well, I've just seen some guy, Michael Chiklis, played in. I don't know if it was – I think it was a true story. Where he came back in his, like, 40s or something and had NCAA eligibility or something like that. I mean, I know those are far and few between, but –
Well, they're not that. I mean, they're not uncommon, though, Brian. Because when you get into like, I get what you're saying. Like, I mean, stories of guys in their 30s or 40s maybe coming back to play college athletics are a little bit novel. But you have,
but the NCAA has always said they want student athletes to be treated more like students. There are tons of students who go to college beyond 25, start college after they're 25.
And we've seen, I mean, whether it's Australian punters in their mid 20s or guys who played a different sport.
Look, let's
coming
face
out
it.
Of I mean I'd
this
forgotten.
Is aimed at your this is aimed at European basketball.
Remember
is what this is aimed at.
Remember Monty Harrison. I'd forgotten about this, but there was a baseball player 28 or 29 year old former Major League Baseball player on Arkansas last year, like playing receiver. He caught a couple of passes for Arkansas. Like it's rare, but I think this is like Bill said, they're trying to close the loophole on extending your eligibility and players coming over from foreign countries with an advantage, seemingly. I don't think they know if it'll hold up to legal scrutiny.
Yeah. Well, I agree with the 5-for-5 100%.
I do too.
I'm a little leery on capping it
Yeah, what they may have to do is say they may have to come up with some evaluation, some computation that says you played this many years of professional ball, then you're going to get this many years of college.
Interesting
ball.
To think, too. I mean, last year was Diego Pavia's sixth year as a college football player. Would have been, you know, would have been edged out of the rule under how we understand it. Carson Beck, I think, also played. I thought Carson Beck played an extra year too. So I mean, like, there have been some, like, maybe the age cutoff, the 24, wouldn't have gotten to him, but you're not going to see
no
60 years.
No, but I mean, I understand why they're doing that. I mean, part of this is there's been a big groundswell from high schools. High school coaches are saying, look, our kids aren't having the opportunities they used to have. There aren't scholarships available for them, because one of the reasons is because these players are getting a sixth and a seventh year. Right. And they just don't have those opportunities, and that's understandable too. I mean, I'm all for the 5 for 5, get as much as you can out of those 5 years.
Yeah, absolutely, I'm for it too, and I think it'll be fine. I think everybody that can play college football gets an opportunity some way, whether they have to go, you know, to a G6 or a smaller school and work their way up, or junior college, whatever. There's always an opportunity out there for somebody who's willing and has some talent.
Appreciate the call, Brian. 334-321-1390. Who do we have up next?
That's John.
Hey, John.
I was I'll get back to my point in a second, but the last caller reminded me of one of my favorite little factoids, is that, you know, Chad Baker Mazzara is older than Zion Williamson.
Right.
You know.
That's crazy.
Unlimited. That's an amazing fact to me.
And, There, he may be older than we thought he was, too, right? Wasn't there a question about his recently?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so who knows, right?
got my Braves general manager wrapped up in that a few years ago. Yeah. Had a question kind of on Auburn baseball. Just kind of thinking in my head watching Bub Terrell eat kebabs in left center field.
Oh, yeah.
And I was thinking, if there was a Mount Rushmore for gregarious, just outgoing, charismatic student athletes we've had at Auburn, you know, you couldn't go wrong with a list of like Cam Newton and Katie Johnson and Cardwell Dylan Cardwell and Bub Terrell, and just kind of wanted y'all's thoughts on. It just seems like maybe in this day and age, it just seems like the outgoing nature of a lot of these players gets to be seen more than it did
Deshaun Davis
even 10, 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think social media and, you know, more video out there just gives them more of an opportunity to show their personality and show who they are.
And it rubs some folks the wrong way. Yeah, I think, a lot of showmanship. And while you just listed some Auburn athletes, I think, who were very popular, they're probably, like, even Auburn fans could tell you, well, you know, they didn't always love Johnny Manziel's antics, or they didn't always love
who was the Ole Miss?
Jameis Winston.
Who was the Ole Miss basketball player?
Oh, Henderson.
Yeah, Marshall Henderson.
Yeah, Marshall Henderson, Alabama and Stetson Bennett would maybe come to mind. Yeah. Also another guy who the age limit would have.
Let me tell you, I mentioned when you were saying Charles Barkley was definitely. A guy who loved the crowd, and the crowd either loved or hated him.
Anyway, guys, thank you. Just had that thought, but
it's cool.
Y'all have a good week now.
Good stuff, John. Thanks for the call.
Love showmanship. Can't help but notice that some folks love showmanship when it's their guys.
Well, when it's your guy, it's great. He's just enjoying. He's loving it. When it's on the other team, he's a hot dog. Instigator.
I'll give you an example of that. Brian, what do you think of Ronald Acuna?
He's a Brave. I love him.
See, that's right. Yeah. Remember the conversations we used to have.
I've got a jersey. What are you talking about?
The conversations we used to have about one of the biggest blank. The biggest blank was Brian was Bryce Harper.
Yes.
But Ronald Acuna just loves the game.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. Bryce Harper is every bad word you can think of. Yes. Yes. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. I'm totally unbiased.
We got a little time?
Yes, we do. We do. It's near the bottom of the hour. I mean, we'll stretch this. Who cares?
Ba-ba-ba-da.
I mean, it is time for us to hear Brian's Monday musings.
And I wrote a little bit about the NCAA tournament going to 76 games and how much everybody hates it.
And how much you
me.
Love it?
Yes. 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 And there are very few people that I've seen that come out in favor of it.
Really, I don't know that I have read or heard anyone of any substance that I pay any attention to who really thinks that this is such a great idea.
But my main point of it is generate more money because the universities
that is the point.
Feel like they need it. But in a few years, that money they generate is going to be just thrown to the pile, and they're going to need more. Mm-hmm. So it's
always,
it's just
need more.
There's not a lot of forward thinking here, in my opinion. All right, so musical journey.
Okay.
We're going back 45 years.
45.
1981.
No, 81. Okay.
Yep.
81.
To the 81. Day an 11-time Grammy-winning multi-genre musical artist, multi-genre is important, okay, is nominated for a Tony Award.
A Tony Award.
That's for, yeah.
For Broadway.
Broadway, yes.
Is he a
female?
Perform, is he
it's a female.
Yes.
It is a female?
Yes. I think Bill's got it. We'll
I'm
let, see if you can get it.
Multi-instrumentalist.
Multi-genre. Multi-genre.
So across different types of music.
Did she even do some classical type stuff? But I mean, she was more known for country pop, I would think.
Yes.
Country pop.
The queen of country rock, as a matter of fact.
Am I thinking
best selling artist, female artist of the 70s?
I know who it is. Did she have some pretty good background people?
She did have a great background group back
Linda
in 19.
Linda Ronstadt.
Yes.
What was she nominated for a Tony
Pirates
for?
Of Penzance.
I had no idea that she was on Broadway.
And
I know Linda Ronstadt from
a movie.
Yeah,
they did a movie of it, and guess who
Mr.
her
Plow,
co-star was in the play and the movie? Famous actor.
Who was it?
Play a movie. Kevin Kline.
Wow. Okay.
And then joining those two in the movie,
I didn't know he was in a Pirates of Penzance movie.
Was Angela Lansbury?
Yes.
So she acted with all.
I loved Linda Ronstadt.
Yeah,
I
did too. She's fantastic.
Incredible.
In the Dodgers jacket,
she was the cutest.
Yes.
But as talented as,
super
as
talented.
Anybody.
Super talented. There's a great biography of her. I think I watched it on Amazon. It came out in 2019.
I need to see that.
You will love it.
I need to see that. I mean, I love. Started with a different drum, Stone Ponies.
Yes, that's right.
The only acting that I knew Linda Ronstadt did was the Simpsons episode, Mr. Plow, where she sings. She appears as herself and sings the Plow King song.
She sings it in Spanish too. A very interesting background. One half of her family, I believe, comes from Mexico.
Okay.
One of her grandparents had like 700 or so inventions and patents.
Wow.
Was involved in the electric stove, the refrigerator, those type of things. Another side built the top of machinery. I guess company in the state of Arizona.
So she didn't come from just nothing.
No, but she had a big family, and they grew up singing a lot of Mexican. I don't know the right word for it, but classic Mexican songs. Mm-hmm. So she just grew up doing that, and she's put out I think two or three Spanish albums, and of course country. She's had two number one country albums. One number one Billboard 100. I mean, not albums, songs.
Singles,
yes.
What were the country singles?
The two country singles were,
were
When
crossover.
Will I Be Loved.
Oh, because that was seriously crossover. When Will I Be Loved and Willing.
Yep, and then To Know Him Is to Love Him was the other one. That was 87.
Oh, okay. All right.
Most of her stuff came out in the 70s, but she had some 80s stuff.
It's funny, because most of her hits were covers.
Yes, a lot of them.
Most of her hits were covers, but she did great jobs of covering.
You're No Good,
Buddy
was her,
Holly, yep. Roy Orbison. Yep. Yeah, You're No Good was not a cover.
Right? No, it was. It was it a. Was? Who had it first?
Wasn't it?
Smokey,
it
was the Smokey Robinson.
Yeah, I was going to say it was like a Motown song.
Yeah. Maybe. Okay. Oh, no, you're right.
But and you mentioned the artist that you mentioned. She's kind of credited with making sure that everybody knew who these people were because she covered their songs and talked about them as people who influenced her career. But she was also very, I think she was musically gifted. She has like this high vocal range. Mm-hmm. And
really good range.
Was one of those artists that would be a perfectionist and talk about, well, this should be this many beats, or, you know, we should do this in this range. I don't know all the speak there, but that's what type of person she was. And then, unfortunately, she got a form of palsy, I guess, in 2013. It was originally thought to be Parkinson's disease, but then it was further diagnosis, progressive supranuclear palsy. And that really, it caused some problems with her voice, and she couldn't really sing anymore, mm-hmm. so she stopped performing in 2013. But in the show, you can see a bunch of her her great videos from the 70s, which I pulled out. I love watching that. And then at her Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction, there's a tribute done by Stevie Nicks, Emmylou Harris, Bonnie Raitt, Sheryl Crow,
yeah, I remember,
and
Sheryl
Carrie
Crow
Underwood.
Yeah.
All of that, and then Glenn Frey from the Eagles accepted it on her behalf.
Of course, he was one of the back. The Eagles, yep. Eagles sort of got their start as being
they did.
Her background band. Now she had a great she was great at picking those type session mm-hmm. musicians who went on. Jay Ferguson, who did Thunder Island.
Yep.
Andrew Gold. You know, we're guys that were background musicians and background singers for her, as well as Glenn Frey and Don Henley yep. and Bernie Ledden and yeah, the early Eagles there.
Is yep. You're No Good the song that you think like people would probably like the best known like Linda Ronstadt music or like her biggest
for
hits,
me
like,
I love Blue Bayou.
Blue Bayou. And of course that's a Roy Orbison.
Yep.
That's a Roy Orbison song. But yeah,
she sings that so good.
She really does.
And then Ooh Baby Baby is a great song too. And that's another cover. That's a maybe that's Smokey Robinson.
That is Smokey Robinson.
Okay, so I don't know what You're No Good.
But I mean most of her songs were covers, but great job. And they don't sound exactly like the original either.
Right.
For the most part. So yeah, Linda Ronstadt just tremendous talent. And again, like I said, was as cute as could be.
Yes.
Yeah.
She dominated. She was great and incredible. That decade of the 70s really belonged to her musically. I mean, a lot of great other artists, but as a female artist, she was at the top.
Don't Know Much was a really big hit too. The Aaron Neville duet, which did very well.
Yeah, she had a ton of them. She really had a ton of them. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Still got a couple of segments left. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390, as we continue with the Monday Drive.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Final 20 minutes of the Monday Drive, and let's get right back to the phones. And Tex is up next. Hey, Tex.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing today?
Hey, buddy.
Hey. I'm really impressed, and I want to thank you, first of all, Brian, Bill, and Dan. Your acumen on music and music history, it makes my Mondays after long days in the office. And I'm driving down the road with dodging lightning and a bad thunderstorm.
Oh,
and
no.
It makes things a little bit better around here.
Hey, so. It is the highlight for me of Monday's show. Yeah, I love Brian's musings, especially when it's something that's, you know, that I can really relate to. Yeah.
And Bill's worked in radio for a while.
Ever.
And I've spent most of my adult life working in radio, and I worked at some stations that played music that was older than me. And so, yeah, it's always fun to hear what Brian has come up with, and it's extra fun when we have, you know, we can contribute a little bit.
Still
to
looking
it
to find another one to go back a few hundred years again. We'll see.
Well, it's, the neat thing is that Bill's voice starts getting really excited when he's got it figured out, especially when he's got it figured out early. So it's really kind of neat to listen to. Yeah. And I apologize for the sound just pounding on my truck right now. So,
is that stuff coming our way?
I guess so.
I don't know if it is, but it's nasty. It's nasty right here. Yeah. Yes. So, but anyway, Dan, I'm a little disappointed in you. You used the word acting and Simpsons in the same sentence.
That counts? Wow. Hey, how dare you?
Voice acting.
How
that
dare
doesn't
you?
Count.
Shout out to Dan Castellaneta and Julie Kavner and Nancy Cartwright and the rest of the Simpsons cast.
Yeah. Cast, okay, yeah, Simpsons cast.
The cast. Hank Azaria, Harry Shearer.
So,
same six
anyway,
people for 40 years.
You know all that.
Yeah, that's right.
Now I understand, Dan. So anyway,
Yardley Smith, she voices
I've never
Lisa.
Seen an episode and never intend on watching an episode.
Oh, no.
Wow.
Anyway, yeah, so I don't – I if I watch cartoons, it's whatever my grandkids want to watch.
Your grandkids anyway, don't need to be watching The Simpsons. Yeah, not till they're a little older.
Tex bailed on primetime cartoons when they canceled The Flintstones. Right? That was the end was the end of primetime cartoons.
Looney Tunes. Yeah.
Well, anyway, it's getting pretty bad. Just a point about this past weekend, Brian. I thought I heard you mention this. The Friday night game when they tied it up. I'm sure there was many people similar to me. I kind of froze for a minute thinking, oh, no.
Yeah.
But when Frehlich hits a home run and my wife is sitting next to me going, what are you doing? And I'm going, just give me a double play ball. Just give me a double play ball in the night. And so it was pretty fun to watch. And I'm really disappointed. I made all these plans to be there this weekend, and the daggum thing starts on Thursday. So I can't make it Thursday, but I'll be there Friday and Saturday.
All right, awesome. So
looking forward to it.
Should
all right,
be
guys,
great
thanks
series.
For the time. It's getting pretty messy right here.
All right, be careful, Tex.
Talk to you later.
Yep.
All right. See you. All right.
334-321-1390. Mitch is up next. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, guys. I know you guys have been talking about baseball, enjoyed this weekend's series and everything, and I got to looking at the dates for the regionals and the super regionals. If Auburn makes it to the super regionals, it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and I think they stagger it. But if Auburn's in a super regional, that's right before the big soccer match. That could be a huge boom for the Auburn Opelika area.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
Wait, would super regional play be the weekend before?
I think it would.
Be the weekend before the soccer game?
Soccer's like on a Tuesday
the ninth, right?
According to the NCAA website.
Wow. So you'd be talking about super regional play potentially on what, Saturday, Sunday, Monday? Or
could
Friday,
be.
Saturday, Sunday, and then that soccer game on Tuesday?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, good point, Mitch. That would be gigantic. That'd be a huge June weekend for the city of Auburn and for various local establishments in the area that would maybe benefit from a lot of out of towners.
Make up some money that they might lose the first weekend of football season.
I think the soccer match has got a chance to more than make up that money.
Yeah, definitely.
Right, I thought the Mississippi State fans out in the outfield were pretty cordial, hooking up our outfielders with a little bit of food in that game. I thought that was pretty hilarious, giving them food over the fence.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was great, and I feel like that's something that has been going on in the SEC for a while. You know, not everywhere, but
no,
in a
no.
lot of different places and
no,
a lot of
yeah. I mean,
ways.
You've seen it here.
Yeah. So I see some Mississippi State fans upset about it on but I just think that's part of baseball, SEC.
You give them a lot of flack, but then give them a break too.
You're playing 30 games. Yeah. You know, it's baseball. It's not football where you're living and dying by one game, right?
You know,
so I appreciate those things.
Right, and then the guy that supposedly interfered with the home run, which they said he didn't.
No, he didn't.
Became like an instant superstar. They just kept going back to him.
Yeah.
You know.
Hey. Pretty quick hands. I mean, he didn't reach. He didn't reach over. I thought that was the right call.
Right. Right. Yeah. He was just put his hands out to catch him. He didn't reach over or anything like that. So I thought it was good play. You know. And he was like, "Oh my God!" And they're like, "Oh, your mom's calling." And all that kind of stuff. But to get back to Monday musings, this is only the second time I've heard. Was it Pirates of the Penzance?
Yeah,
that's right.
Since
the movie Pretty Woman.
Okay.
If you guys remember, Richard Gere took Julia Roberts to the opera.
Oh, that's
in
what they go see.
San Francisco.
I did not remember that.
Wow. Okay. I didn't.
San Francisco, and an older woman in the balcony goes, "So, how did you like it, dear?" She goes, "Oh, I loved it so much, I almost pissed in my pants." And Richard Gere goes, "She liked it just as much as the Pirates of Penzance."
That's funny.
Yeah. So that's only the second time I've ever heard that line. You know. So just thought I'd throw that out there since you guys are movie and music gurus and everything. But That's all I got, guys.
Always good, Mitch. Yep, good hearing from you.
Yeah, I'm a Kevin Klein fan.
Yeah, me too.
I was largely unaware of. I knew that he had a musical theater career and a decorated like theatrical career.
Yeah.
I just watched Fish Called Wanda again a couple of weeks ago. He's so great in Fish Called Wanda. But I have not seen. Pirates of Penzance, the film adaptation with Linda Ronstadt.
I think it was panned pretty bad at the time. I don't know if that was accurate or not, but yeah.
Apparently, it's you don't see it on it's not
I don't see it anywhere.
Not rerun on cable all that often.
No, I can't say that I've seen it either. So.
I don't think I have. Maybe bits and pieces here and there, but yeah.
Great stuff, Mitch.
Yeah, no kidding. We'll go ahead and get to our final break of the afternoon. Still time for you to get through if you'd like. 334-321-1390 as we wind it down here on the Monday Drive.
Don't buy the lie. This is Lee County District Attorney Jessica Vin.
1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Final segment of the Monday Drive. Mm-hmm. Bill, Dan, and Brian. I don't have a whole lot else. One thing we didn't talk about, I saw a story where Greg Sankey has come out against some of the wishes, apparently, of the American Football Coaches Association and those people that are wanting to shorten the college football season, which would be me as well.
And me.
I'm not a fan of the college football season lasting till the end of January. I know that ESPN wants it to, and what Greg Sankey is saying is, he's concerned that college football will just be swallowed up by NFL playoff action if they try to play games, playoff games in December. Hmm. And I just don't buy that.
College football is the second most popular sport in the country, in the U.S., okay, there's a way to get it on at the same time the NFL's on. I mean, they don't have to
all be competing against those NFL games either.
Exactly.
Because the AFCA, I mean, there have been proposals to try to end the regular season by Thanksgiving, do away with the college championship games, start the playoffs, end the playoffs before the middle of January.
I mean, the reason I'd like to see the college football season over with, you know, in that first week of January I think that the portal obviously is part of it, but also feels like
that's the start of college basketball. I mean, the real start of conference basketball.
And the NFL playoffs dominate every weekend seemingly after that. I think that if you could find a way to crown a champion in college football around New Year's Day.
Yeah, within a week.
Within a week of New Year's Day.
I think that'd be great.
And you can if you start week zero and you have a 16-team single elimination play at home. You know, that works out almost perfectly.
Yep.
I think that there is some desire to maximize. You know, I think that you run into Monday Night Football still going on in December. They want to play some of these games on Monday nights for TV audiences in January. And there's the thought that people are traveling in December and maybe, you know, TV audiences, maybe like and these sorts of factors.
And when I travel, I still can watch games.
You have a device on your phone now that you watch.
Yeah, there's a way to do that.
But I think these factors have played a role in the championship games being in January.
It's all money.
That's what it is.
That's exactly what it is, just like we talked about with the basketball expansion.
That's all it is,
and I will say with the basketball expansion, like if you're a fan of a team playing on Tuesday or Wednesday, right? Like things will be, like it will be a little bit more special than if your team was out of it. But there are the long term, you know what happens when at some point the well's going to be dry, right? Like you expand a playoff, you take some of the specialness away, you're going to grow it to a point where maybe you already have where making the thing it isn't the accomplishment that it should be, especially for an SEC team or a Big Ten team, and I don't know if what you're going to get out of it. You know, those Tuesday and Wednesday games are worth upsetting the balance.
And the other thing, Greg Sankey continues to say, We've got contracts. We have contracts. We can't give up the conference championship game. Everybody else is willing to, you know, forget their contracts or work those things out because of the extra money that's going to be made. Don't tell me the SEC can't recoup or make more by having, you know, teams involved in playoffs as opposed
playoff
to
that
playing.
Weekend. Yes. Right, exactly. Exactly. He's reluctant to do it because the SEC is still the most profitable championship game there is. But I think that's going down, right? It's trending in direction.
Yes, it is.
And leaders with vision and with a good look at what the future could look like, the same thing as vision, I guess, would understand that and maybe make moves to offset that, right? Or to plan ahead. I just see a bunch of guys that run this sport right now all focused on the short term, all focused on the now, and not really looking ahead and trying to do what's best for the future of the sport. And I don't like it.
Brian, real quick before the music starts playing, tell folks about what you got going on.
Let's look ahead, Brian.
Yes.
Give us your vision of what's going on.
My vision is I will be in Jacksonville, Alabama tomorrow night watching Auburn get a little bit of revenge on a very good team that came to Auburn and run-ruled them. And then I'll be at Plainsman Park starting Thursday night for a really, really important and big series against the SEC champion Georgia Bulldogs. We will have blowout coverage of Big Cat Weekend. This Saturday. Be a ton of top prospects.
Yeah,
in here.
How many are you expecting?
Don't have any idea yet.
I just wonder. I mean, a lot of times it's been somewhere in the 30 ballpark,
right,
of 30, or
which
so.
Makes sense, right? Because you want to get your guys, your top guys. You don't want it. To be a whole bunch of people there that you're probably not going to sign and make it a distraction. So I would say it's somewhere around there, maybe a little bit more because you're going to bring in some juniors and sophomores too, rising kids. So look for all that and more at auburnsports.com this week. Follow me on Twitter, @ @BMATAU.
All right, BMAT, see you at the ballpark tomorrow. Yes. Well, no, I won't. I won't be in Jacksonville. I'll see you at the ballpark Thursday.
Thursday.
All right. We'll talk to you tomorrow, folks. We should have the voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, on with us in hour number one. So looking forward to that as we preview that matchup against Jack State, look back at last weekend and toward the final big weekend in baseball. But that's going to wrap things up for the Monday edition of The Drive. Yep, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.